Hi, everybody. Welcome to the interview series for the Nonfiction Authors Association. Today's session is with Arlene Miller, and we're going to be talking about how to avoid common grammar and punctuation mistakes. I'm sure I'm making many of them myself. I'm your host, Stephanie Chandler. Always appreciate you spending time with us. This event will last 30 minutes, and recordings are available to authority and VIP members of the Nonfiction Authors Association. If you're new to us, in addition to recordings, our community members receive exclusive templates, checklists, and other content released weekly, media leads sent out by email every Friday, access to our active member community on Facebook, discounts sent out by email, discounts off our year-round nonfiction book awards program, our nonfiction writers conference events, which are conducted entirely online, and discounts with our awesome partners, including Lulu, Find a Way Voices, Office Depot, Ingram Spark, and more. We would love for you to join us over at nonfictionauthorsassociation.com. And now I'd like to introduce our guest. Arlene Miller, also known as the Grammar Diva, is the author of 10 grammar books, a self-publishing book, and a novel. Arlene's easy-to-use and friendly grammar books clear up common grammar issues and are used by schools and colleges. In addition to writing books, she writes the weekly Grammar Diva blog. She's copy-edited both fiction and nonfiction and presented grammar and business writing talks and workshops. You can learn more about her at thegrammardiva.com. Arlene, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for the invitation.
So I've got a bunch of specific questions to go through with you. So can we start with how to use I and me properly?
Yes. You can do it the grammatical way, or you can take some shortcuts. Usually the problem is when you're talking about two people, you have a compound subject or object, like him and me went to the movies. Well, a lot of people do say that, but take out one of the people. Him went to the movies, you probably wouldn't say that. Me went to the movies, you probably wouldn't say that. So it is he and I. Usually when it's at the beginning of the sentence, you use I because it's a subject. And when it's further on in the sentence, you're going to use me because it's an object, but you can't always count on that. It usually does work that way. You would say, he told, a lot of people would say, he told Jim and I. Well, take Jim out, he told I. You wouldn't say that. So you know that it is he told Jim, he told me, he told Jim and me. And if they are after a little preposition like to, or with, or by, it's going to be me. And it is not ever going to be myself. He told myself. He told Jim and myself. Myself, we can talk about myself later. But that is the difference between me and I.
Wow, okay.
It's overcorrected to use I, so people use I when they should use me.
And I love that trick to take one out of the sentence. So tell us about myself then. So how does that apply?
I hear myself used incorrectly all the time on television. It is a certain kind of pronoun. It's called a reflexive or an intensive. So it's used in very specific ways. You would say, I baked that cake myself, or I myself baked that cake. Generally, if you're going to use myself, look at the subject of the sentence and it should be I. The same with all the self. If it's himself, the subject is going to be he. So, and you don't ever use it as a subject. It's not going to be he and myself did something. It's he and I. He didn't give it to myself. Or he didn't give it to Ted and myself. It's going to be me, because the subject was he. So it bounces back to the subject. It's called reflexive. So it's, you're usually going to have I as the subject. So myself is really overused instead of, it's usually me.
Wow, great examples. So similarly, what about who and whom?
Who and whom? I heard that who and whom are, that whole thing's going to be gone by 2025. So if you could wait 5 years, you won't have to know the difference.
What does that mean? Is whom going away?
Whom, I guess, will go away.
Yeah.
I mean, whom is great, but there's nothing worse than a whom that's used when who should be used. That really sounds funny. It's basically like I and me. Who is used when I is used, and whom is used when me is used. So who is a subject and whom is an object. There is a kind of a shortcut. Let's say you're asking the question, who are you inviting? And you don't know if it's whom are you inviting or who are you inviting. Most people say, who are you inviting? Answer the question. You are inviting me. You are inviting him. It's an object. So it's actually, whom are you inviting? And most people get this part right. If it's, once again, if it's after to or with or by or from, you use whom. To whom are you speaking? And a lot of people get that right. It's the object of a preposition.
So interesting.
Whom and whom is a tricky one.
Well, it'll make it a lot easier if whom goes away. So, yes. And I'll tell you, one of my personal pet peeves, well, there's two. It's the it's versus it's with an apostrophe, and then the there, and there. Let's start with it's.
Okay. And the your and your.
Right. Oh, and your and your. Oh, yes.
It's and it's is actually really easy, and it goes, it's not any exception to any rule. It goes by the rules. It's with the apostrophe is a contraction, meaning it is, and most people know that. All contractions have an apostrophe. So it's, when it's a contraction, meaning it is, shortened from two words, it has an apostrophe. The other it's without the apostrophe is possessive. All the pronouns that are possessive do not have an apostrophe. So it's is just like ours and hers and theirs. None of those, and yours, none of those have an apostrophe. So it's as a possessive, you know, the dog ate its food, no apostrophe. Simple. And your is the same thing. Y-O-U apostrophe R-E is the contraction. You are the possessive, no apostrophe. Simple.
Yeah, and I guess if you're writing out your sentence, you just need to ask, is it it is or
right.
It's and your, and there, and there. Can we talk about that? Because that drives me crazy too.
Well, once again, the they are has an apostrophe. So that's the one that's the apostrophe R-E. And the other two, I guess you just kind of have to memorize. You know, there is a, E-R-E is a place, and T-H-E-I-R, not I-E-R, is a possessive. That one I don't see wrong quite as often as it's and your.
Yeah, interesting. So let's talk about some punctuation. How about semicolons? When are we supposed to use those?
Those are my favorite punctuation marks. I love semicolons. And people are afraid of semicolons. Mm-hmm. They don't want to use them. And actually, semicolons are probably the easiest of all the punctuation marks. There's only like two rules. There's only really two places where you use them. The most common is if you have two sentences and you don't want to put a period to separate them because they're closely related. If they're closely related, you still can put a period, or you can use a comma and make it a compound sentence. Or you can just put a semicolon and then a lowercase letter. For example, my sister lives in Sacramento, semicolon. I live in Los Angeles. They're closely related. You could put a period. You could put a comma but or comma and, but you can put a semicolon in two closely related sentences, and it's still called a compound sentence. That's one use. The only other use for a semicolon is to separate items in a series that already have commas in them. So you can figure, it's for clarity, so you can figure out the sentence. For example, if you said, last summer I went to Boston, comma, Massachusetts, Albany, comma, New York, and San Francisco, California. since each of those little pairs, city, state, has a comma already, if you put a comma after Massachusetts, if you put a comma after the states, you just get a big messy series. So you would say, last summer I went to Boston, comma, Massachusetts, semicolon. So you know that all goes together. Albany, comma, New York, semicolon, and Los Angeles, comma, California, period. And those are really the only two uses for a semicolon. They cannot be used instead of a colon ever.
And that's a perfect segue to colons. When do we use those?
Those introduce things. And most people know you're going to have a list, you put a colon. It's not quite that simple, but usually colons indicate something else is coming that you're introducing. So you can separate two sentences with a colon instead of a semicolon or a period, but I would avoid it because it doesn't happen too often. It's when the second sentence really follows or is a result of that first one.
And it doesn't have to be a list?
Usually it's a list. You can introduce a quote sometimes with a colon. The mayor said the following in his speech, colon, quotation marks. You can do that with sometimes a longer quote. Doesn't even have to be a long quote, or yes, lists. But the items in the list, if you're going to use a colon, what comes before the colon should actually be a complete sentence, or you don't need a colon. And it doesn't matter if it's a vertical list or a horizontal list. So if you were talking about a recipe, you'd say the ingredients in this recipe are as follows, colon. Then you could put them in a vertical list, you could put them in a horizontal list. But if you just said the ingredients are, you don't need a colon. If you're doing a vertical list, if you put a colon, it's not going to look really bad. But if you're just writing a sentence and you're doing it horizontally and you said the ingredients in this recipe are flour, sugar, and chocolate, you don't put the, it's just a sentence and you just don't interrupt it with a colon.
And you just brought one that's, I hadn't thought to put on my list for you, but is versus are, that's another one that drives me a little bit crazy. Is how would you?
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
Is a singular and are is plural.
And that helps.
That helps. But there's so many, you know, if you use either an or, the two things are each on their own and it's a singular verb. So it's neither my sister nor, either Paul or Brad is bringing his guitar. It's either and it's is. But it's, you know, if you have and, it's Paul and Brad are bringing their guitars. So with that one, either
makes it singular.
But it gets really complicated. Neither the boy nor the girls, is it is or are? Mm. Whichever one is closest to the verb agrees with it. So it would be neither the boy nor the girls are.
Interesting.
Or neither the girls nor the boy is.
You're nailing why I'm not an editor. These are too many rules for me.
Hardly anybody's going to notice if you get that kind of thing wrong, because it's really a minor thing that people really don't think about. It's the same with a collective noun like the orchestra. Is it the orchestra are or the orchestra is? And I think it's different in British English. And most people just use the singular and nobody's going to care. But technically, if you think of the orchestra as a whole unit and they're all doing the same thing, they're singular. But if you're talking about the individuals, it's plural. The orchestra are tuning their instruments because they're all tuning different instruments. But the orchestra is playing at 8 p.m. It's a group. But singular usually sounds right.
Wow. That's crazy. The other one that I notice a lot in the media when the news, they're reading the news, is the an versus a, like I'll see some say a historical event or an historical event. Which one is correct?
Let me think about that for a second. H is silent or not. If the H is silent, that means that the word starts with a vowel sound. So you'd use an, like an herb. It's not, you know, a herb, but it's herb. So you'd say an herb, because when you have a vowel sound, you use an apple. So sometimes the H is pronounced and sometimes the H isn't. So it really depends. So it would be ahistorical would be ahistorical event. Although
that's what I've always thought, but yeah.
Historical. Maybe they're kind of just saying an historical and you can't really hear the H. But yeah, if you pronounce the H, it should be just the A.
All right. So an before a vowel word.
Yes.
Great. That's a great tip. So Arlene, I struggle the most with comma overuse.
Doesn't everyone.
So what are some rules about commas? Help me.
990 rules for commas.
Are there? So I'm not alone. So.
And some people love commas and they sprinkle them like salt. And other people don't use very many and you can't tell what they're talking about. Mm. And it's, I mean, basically the rule for all punctuation is to make things clear, to make them readable. But there are comma rules where even if you didn't use a comma, things would be readable. So there are some gray areas. So you can go by the old, if you pause, you put a comma in, but sometimes you can go a little wrong there. The main rules for commas are, use a comma if not using a comma would make something unclear. And the other rule is don't use a comma unless you have a reason to. Those are the two main comma rules. So it's don't use one unless you have a reason. And if things are unclear without one, use one. However, of course, there are many comma rules. The most common are obviously between the items in a series. Those that you definitely need. Or a compound sentence, between two sentences that are joined by a conjunction. Unless they're really short, then you don't need a comma. If you have a long introduction to a sentence before the main part starts, like, although I am not going, comma, you know, they are going in my place, because that clarifies things. If your direct address, Stephanie, comma, clean your room, you use one for direct address. After the greeting and the closing of letters. And interrupters in the middle of a sentence, which can be a word, a phrase, a clause that starts with which. So if something is added information in the middle, you surround it with commas. Sometimes that's gray. So commas are really, really tricky.
That's actually a relief to hear you say that.
I had a writer ask me a bunch of comma questions, someone that I was editing. And she asked really brilliant comma questions to which most of them really had no definite answer. It could be either way. Because there are in comma use, there are gray areas and you won't find people who agree.
Well, and in publishing, we follow the Chicago Manual of Style and they recommend serial commas. Can you explain what that is for those who maybe aren't even familiar with that term?
Are you talking about the Oxford comma?
The Oxford comma, yes.
Oxford comma is the comma before the last item in a series, before the and. You know, I have oranges, comma, apples, comma, grapes, and watermelon. Grapes, comma, watermelon, and watermelon, or just grapes and watermelon. It is optional. The Chicago Manual of Style likes it, and boy, 99% of editors like that comma.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it clarifies things. The only time I would not use it is there is, and I can't think of an example, but there are a few occasions where it confuses things. I think I can maybe come up with a
That's helpful, because the fact that it's optional,
it is optional.
You can leave it up to the writer. Although I would argue if you're publishing a book, it should be in your manuscript that way. And your editor's probably going to put it in there if you didn't. So,
for example, Mary, comma, my boss and I. You can't tell if that's, if Mary is your boss. You can't tell if there's two people or three people.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, if you put the comma in, there's, you still can't tell. Bad example.
Well, this is why it's all so confusing, and I'm glad to know there's.
But there are cases where if you put it in, you can't figure out how many people there are.
Yeah.
But 95% of the time, the Oxford comma is just fine and preferred by most people.
Yeah. So quotation marks, I see this a lot when it comes to your punctuation and quotation marks. Should your punctuation, when is it supposed to be inside a quotation mark, and when is it okay to be outside of a quotation mark?
Okay. American English and British English differ here, so I'm going to go with the American. Commas and periods go inside quotation marks, no matter what, no matter what they belong to. If you've got a sentence and there's quotation marks at the end, a comma or a period, no matter where it is, always go inside, always, always. Semicolons and colons, you don't often see right next to quotation marks, but if they are, they always go outside the quotation marks. So commas and periods, always inside. Colons and semicolons, always outside. Question marks and exclamation points, it depends. It depends. So if you say, he asked, quotes, are we there yet? The question is just the quoted part of the sentence. It goes inside. If the whole sentence is a question, but not the quote, it goes outside. If both the quote and the whole sentence are questions, like, did he ask, comma, quote, are we there yet? So he asked a question and the whole thing is a question. The default is to put the question mark inside.
Oof, this is why we need editors.
if you are putting it outside, there's no like period before the quotation marks, you know, and you don't ever use question mark quotes another question mark.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay. Your job requires a lot of detail. That's amazing.
You know, I learned this all when I taught seventh grade English. I learned it all in the grammar book.
I'm sure you did. Yeah, it just, not all of us retained all of our seventh grade English, unfortunately.
No, I mean when I taught. I remember what I learned when I was in school.
Yeah. What about which, W-I-C-H, and that?
Boy, that's a problem. Basically, usually when you use which, there's commas around that part of the sentence. The little which clause has commas. And that doesn't. Well, that doesn't really help much, because when do you use which and when do you use that? Okay. Which is used for non-essential things, which means extra information. Therefore, you can put commas around it because the sentence would still make sense if you took that part out. If you use that, it's more for essential information. So, can I give you an example?
Please.
This is the book that I wrote. This is the book. What book? Doesn't really say much. This is the book. If you're holding up the book, this is the book that I wrote. Mm-hmm. You need the part that I wrote. It identifies the book you're talking about. So it's essential. You wouldn't pause if you said it, probably. And you wouldn't put a comma. And you wouldn't use which. But if you said, I wrote this book, comma, which is due at the library tomorrow. I wrote this book, and it's a, by the way, it's due at the library tomorrow. If it's more of a by the way, it's not essential, you'd probably pause, you'd use which, and you'd put commas around it. That would be the same with who, if you're using a person, but you use who for both essential and non-essential. So if you said, the girl who was sitting in the front row is my cousin, that's, you wouldn't pause, and that identifies who my cousin is. It's the girl who was sitting in the front row. So you need that information, so you don't use a comma. If you said, my cousin, who is sitting in the front row, plays the violin. It's kind of, by the way, she's sitting in the front row. It doesn't really identify her. Once again, sometimes those are a little gray area, whether it's essential or not essential. Sometimes you have essential and non-essential things even without the which and that, which is really kind of a head trip. You could say, my brother Paul goes to Harvard. Do you put commas before and after Paul or not? Well, if you say my brother Paul goes to Harvard, it's got a little different meaning than my brother, comma, Paul, comma, goes to Harvard. And it's really kind of hard to see, but if you think about it, my brother, comma, Paul goes to Harvard implies that Paul is non-essential and it's added information, which further implies that he's your only brother. But if you say my brother Paul goes to Harvard and you don't have commas, that implies that it is necessary, which further implies you need to identify him by name because you have more than one brother. It's not your brother Ed, it's your brother Paul. So,
oof.
that one, most people don't really realize that. And it's just kind of, you know, and most of the time it really is not misleading. That's just kind of a picky thing.
And going back on that, I think your example was, this is the book that I wrote. Could that be removed from that sentence? This is the book I wrote?
Yes. Yes, a lot of times that is left out, and that's fine.
And a lot of times if you're trying to trim unnecessary words,
right.
That is one of them.
I always liked to put it in, but I think it's actually preferable to leave it out if it's not needed.
Yeah. Wow, so many interesting examples, Arlene. Is there anything else critical we should know about?
Less and fewer.
Oh, tell us about that.
I hear all the time the less instead of the fewer. All the time. There are less is used instead of fewer. There are less people here. No, it's fewer. Less is used with singulars and with things that you can't count. Fewer is used for plurals and things that can be counted. So you would say, there is less sugar in this cake than that cake. Less sugar. You can't count sugar. You can count the grains of sugar, but you can't actually count sugar. So it's less. But if you're going to say people, it's there are fewer people because you can count them. It's a plural and you can count people. There are fewer people. Fewer pencils. Fewer windows. But less salt. Less time. Because you can't count time. Less trouble, fewer accidents.
So fewer are just based on things you can
very
count.
Misused.
Whew, okay. Well, this was a great school session today. Thank you very much. Arlene, remind our listeners what services you offer and how they can connect with you.
Okay. Well, you can find me at the www.thegrammardiva.com. where you can see all my books. You can buy them from there, but it just goes to Amazon or wherever. So they're on all the online retailers and can be ordered from your favorite independent bookstore. And you can sign up for my blog on there as well. I send out a blog once a week, which I also share on social media, but you can get it in your inbox in the blog. People seem to like it. It's about grammar. Sometimes it's about words. I try to put humor in. And if you sign up, I don't bother you with lots of emails. It's just pretty much the blog that comes every weekend. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn as the Grammar Diva. You can email me if you have a grammar question, and I will answer it. You can email me about a self-publishing question, because I've done it a dozen times. And I used to do a lot more editing than I do now, but I am planning to, I would love to do an online course.
Great.
That's my next plan, if I can get the technology.
There's lots of choices out there for sure. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate all these fabulous tips. I know I learned a few tricks today. So thanks for that, Arlene.
You're welcome.
My pleasure. And thanks so much to our listeners for joining us today. We conduct these interviews every Wednesday. You can check the schedule or sign up for our mailing list to get notifications about our events at nonfictionauthorsassociation.com. I hope you all have a great day.